I received a call from one of the special agents who told me that he believed that they had a serial killer at the VA Medical Center.
Mom, he said, please don't leave me here. I don't want to die.
It was not your typical murder case involving a gun or a knife.
No, it's not that unusual to find a handbook of poison in a nurse's house. But what was curious is that there were pages dog-eared. One was for potassium and one was for epinephrine.
One for potassium and one for epinephrine. Welcome to Murder Time and the Crime Stories Control Room. Our vault contains the most extensive collection of true crime interviews in the world. And from that vault, I'm going to build you a troubling story of silent, deliberate murder. My story today takes place in Northampton, Massachusetts, a few hours west of Boston. It's a story of how an attractive and well-liked nurse becomes a mass killer of defenseless victims. And I don't know about you, but I wonder, how does that happen? The story begins with a phone call to Special Agent Steve Plant.
On February 29th, 1996, I received a call about a new case.
Steve's an investigator for the Inspector General of the Veteran Affairs Office.
Our criminal investigations involve robberies, homicides, embezzlements, contract frauds. Our job was to conduct criminal investigations within the VA system.
And the call Steve Plant takes today is about homicide. He's called by the VA Medical Center in Northampton. Veterans Affairs Medical Centers serve the men and women of America's armed forces. After military service, some veterans return to this country damaged, physically and mentally. With more, here's Judith Cameron, a reporter with the New Hampshire Daily Gazette.
The veterans' hospitals are specialized. The one in Northampton is primarily a psychiatric hospital, but they also have general beds and intensive care units. For the families of veterans who seek care there, it's a very, very important place.
This is Massachusetts State Trooper Kevin Murphy.
They didn't have any surgical options, but if you had a heart attack, if you had diabetes, they could treat you there, similar to how you'd be treated in a regular hospital.
There's been a spike in patient deaths at the VA, and that's attracted the attention of the Veterans Affairs Office.
The director of the hospital ordered a board of investigation over a certain period of time to determine how many deaths occurred.
That investigation means Special Agent Steve Plant gets busy. He begins by poring over patient files. Here's U.S. Attorney William Welch explaining how dying is normal on the VA hospital wards.
Because the types of patients who were admitted at the VA Medical Center had serious illnesses, the fact that they had cardiac arrests or cardiac events in and of itself wasn't that unusual.
Agent Plant reviews the file of Korean War veteran Stanley Jagodowski. Stanley was showing a strong recovery from a surgical procedure in the VA.
He had been getting much better, and he had been recommended to be transferred to the VA Medical Center's nursing home unit.
Plant notes that a little after 8 in the evening, nurses find Stanley in good spirits. But just before midnight, there's a code, a medical emergency. Stanley Jagodowski suddenly and unexpectedly dies. Healthy snacks have a bad reputation. And let's be honest, most don't taste very good. They don't fill you up, and they certainly don't satisfy your cravings. This episode is sponsored by Monk Pack, who makes snacks that taste like our favorite sugary treats, but with 1 gram of sugar or less. They're perfect for a quick breakfast, a snack between Zoom calls, or a guilt-free dessert. They taste incredible, and you can't beat the low-sugar nutrition they provide. And by shopping online, you can avoid another trip to the grocery store by getting Monk Pack delivered right to your door. Monk Pack Keto Granola Bars contain just 1 gram of sugar, 2 to 3 grams of net carbs, and they're only 140 calories. They're gluten-free, grain-free, plant-based, and non-GMO, with no soy, trans fat, sugar alcohols, or high-intensity sweeteners. Monkpack Keto Granola Bars have a soft and chewy texture and come in delicious flavors like coconut cocoa chip, peanut butter, and blueberry almond vanilla. While they're great for anyone following a keto lifestyle, you absolutely do not have to be keto to love these. They're the perfect snack for anyone who's trying to eat better or cut back on sugar and carbs without sacrificing taste. I'm still going strong with my healthy eating, and I'm feeling great. I'm also getting more active and going for a ton of walks, hikes, and bike rides. It has me working up an aggressive appetite, so I always have a few Monkpack keto granola bars on me to satisfy the hunger. Now, I know I've been pushing the blueberry almond vanilla flavor for months, but I think there's a new contender when it comes to my favorite flavor, coconut cocoa chip. Oh my God, so good. One of my favorite candy bars as a kid had all these flavors, but a fraction of the calories. Try it for yourself and you'll see. And we have a special deal for our listeners. Get 20% off your first purchase of any Monkpack product by visiting monkpack.com and entering our code CRIME at checkout. And Monkpack is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. If you don't like it for any reason, they'll exchange the product or refund your money, whichever you prefer. To get started, just go to munkpack.com and select any product. Then, enter the code CRIME at checkout to save 20% off your purchase. Monkpack, delicious, nutritious food you can count on. We thank them for sponsoring the podcast. Special Agent Steve Plant turns his attention to the premature death of a much younger, more vigorous outpatient, Henry Hooten. Henry has also died on Ward C.
Very adventurous, very playful. He was a little more than 3 years younger than me, so he was aggravating at times, but I was brought up, you know, with you're his big sister, and it's your job to protect him and watch out for him.
That's Christine Duquette, Henry's big sister.
He enlisted in the fall of 1979, and he went to basic training and then technical training, and his first tour of duty was over in England.
Henry Hooten gets banged up, breaking up a brawl in an English bar.
He ended up getting a beer bottle on the back of the head and slammed down onto a cement floor, face first. He ended up with a frontal lobe injury in the brain.
Poor Henry comes home deeply damaged.
I made a trip to go visit him when he was released from the hospital, and I could see a whole personality change in him already. He was not the same person. And within 9 months, he was diagnosed as paranoid schizophrenic. On one hand, it was like taking care of a child again. And then at other times, he'd be hearing voices and he'd be listening to them, and he would become very aggressive and violent.
Henry ends up in and out of the VA psych ward for over a decade. Late in 1995, Henry's mother brings him to the VA for help.
At the time he had the flu, he was violently ill with it.
Henry wants something for his nausea, but his doctor has other plans.
The doctor was explaining to him and my mother that they're going to keep him in the medical building overnight.
Henry freaks out.
He just started screaming and yelling and going off the wall.
Brain injured or not, Henry has heard some disturbing rumors about Ward C.
He said staff and patients are all talking about people being killed. People are dying around here for no reason. He was hysterical.
But his doctor insists Henry stay put.
He looked at my mom and his last words to her were, "Mom," and he was crying at that point. He said, "I don't want to die. Please don't leave me here."
But Julia does leave her son. A few hours later, her phone rings. She's told Henry is gone.
The doctor said to her, no, he's gone, as in dead, D-E-A-D. From that moment on, my mother, for the rest of the evening, did nothing but cry. She was just numb. She wasn't saying a word. I got in the car, and I went up there for identification purposes.
Can you imagine the pain, the guilt Julia must have felt? When she gets to the hospital, Christine is told Henry had three codes. medical emergencies involving his heart. The third code killed him. The information just doesn't sit right with Christine.
I mean, he had the flu. I don't know of too many cases where you go into cardiac arrest three times with the flu.
Christine wants answers.
After speaking with the doctor, the words just came out, I want an autopsy. And he said, no, you don't need one, and I insisted that he's going to have an autopsy.
The findings are not encouraging.
His autopsy showed that his heart had sped up to such a rate that part of it exploded throughout the chest cavity.
Exploded. But Christine Duquette is not the first person to suspect something's not quite right on Ward C. Henry's heart attack death, the heart attack of Korean War vet Stanley Jagodowski, and a rash of codes on ex-serviceman Francis Marier make one Ward C nurse wonder. That nurse's name is Kathy Ricks, and Kathy Ricks goes looking for answers. Here's an interview with the Boston Globe reporter Thomas Farragher about what Kathy finds.
Hospital records could not account for 88 out of 135 ampules of epinephrine that were dispensed on Ward C. When epinephrine is dispensed to somebody who is in trouble, has a heart condition that needs to be stabilized, it can be a lifesaver. But when it's dispensed or given to somebody whose heart is normal, it essentially accelerates the heart rate to a dangerous level.
That pounding in your chest? That's epinephrine. With more, here's U.S. Attorney William Welch.
Epinephrine is a naturally produced chemical within the body generated by the adrenal glands. It causes various systems within the body to become stimulated by its release. So, for example, if someone scares you and yells boo, your heart rate will increase dramatically as a result of the release of epinephrine.
And synthetic epinephrine is undetectable. VA Special Agent Steve Plant.
There was no way to tell the difference between synthetic epinephrine and epinephrine produced by the body. So if you're going to inject somebody with synthetic epinephrine, it metabolizes so fast that you wouldn't be able to determine in an autopsy.
Nurse Kathy Ricks knows exactly what epinephrine does, and she tells VA Special Agent Steve Plant about Ward C's missing supply.
Before Kathy Ricks went on vacation, she did an inventory of the epinephrine in the ICU. When she returned to work, approximately 2 weeks later, the majority of medication was missing.
And that's not all, according to Massachusetts State Trooper Kevin Murphy.
So she checked the records and she found that no patient on the ward had been prescribed that medication, and therefore nobody should have been given that medication.
And no epinephrine should be missing. In late January 1996, Army vet Thomas Callahan complains of sudden pain in his chest, then codes. After helping save his life, Ricks makes a sobering discovery. Reporter Thomas Farragher.
She checked the disposal bucket and found 3 broken ampules of epinephrine.
And in early February, 74-year-old Michelle Cascone has 4 heart codes in rapid succession. The fourth one kills him. It's the last straw for Ricks. Trooper Kevin Murphy.
So she contacts 2 of her colleagues. One is John Wall, one is Renee Walsh, and she says to them, there's some anomalies here that we need to check on.
The 3 nurses realize that almost all heart attack codes happen when one particular nurse is on the floor. She is Ward C nurse Kristen Gilbert. Pretty, perky Kristen Gilbert is in her early 30s, married with 2 young kids.
Kristen Gilbert had a reputation as being a calm and compassionate nurse. Her proficiency reports from her superiors were, if not stellar, very good. They said that she was, a calming influence. She was she worked well with mentally impaired patients, and that she was frequently assigned to the ICU.
But as reporter Thomas Farragher notes, Nurse Gilbert holds a dubious distinction.
After Gilbert joined the evening shift in 91, the death rate there tripled. And the death rate on the shift that she had left returned to normal levels. And so on Ward C, she acquired the nickname Angel of Death.
In the highly charged world of intensive care, gallows humor is the norm. And Gilbert is a popular member of the team. Reporter Judith Cameron.
Kristen helped organize a club called the Sunshine Club. And the Sunshine Club was used when someone became sick and would get flowers. And she was also very social and after hours would go down to the local bar and hang out.
Gilbert is very interested in a newly hired security guard. His name is James Perrault. The Boston Globe's Tom Farragher provides some context.
So Perrault knew Gilbert was a wife and mother, but she had hinted to him that her 7-year marriage was on the rocks. So they began a increasingly flirtatious affair. They exchanged emails that were funny and increasingly sexually charged. And eventually that romance blossomed into a full-blown love affair.
Hospital regulations require a member of the security team to attend all code events, so when emergencies arise, Perrault gets close to Gilbert. Apparently, really, really close.
So by February 1996, the love affair between Perrault and Gilbert was in full flower. And what was interesting is that he was by her side at every single code that she responded to.
Codes with benefits. One cold February night, Gilbert is the only nurse working Ward C's intensive care unit. Her only patient, Air Force vet Kenneth Cutting.
And Kristen was supposed to work until 11:30 that night. She went to her supervisor and she said, "You know, Kenny's not doing too well. If Kenny dies, can I go home early tonight?" And the supervisor, being in the business, didn't see anything wrong with that.
At 7:10 p.m., moments after Gilbert returned to the ICU, Kenneth Cutting suffered a massive heart attack and died. Gilbert delivered his body to the morgue, and less than 2 hours later, by 9 p.m. or so, she had checked out of work.
With another unexpected death on the ward, Kristen Gilbert's co-workers have seen enough. This is reporter Fred Contrada of the Springfield Republican.
When the three nurses finally came forward, they did it after a lot of trepidation and a lot of discussion.
With five unexpected deaths in 6 months, the Northampton Veterans Hospital wants to find out why. Here's Steve Plant.
We're just trying to find out why this anomaly happened at the hospital.
Plant dives back into the case files. Kenneth Cutting, a blind Air Force serviceman, dead. Former Marine Michelle Cascone with four codes, dead. 2 weeks later, 68-year-old Edward Squira, dead.
My focus in the investigation in the beginning was just not on one individual. It was involved everybody. So my focus was basically to remain unbiased and let the pieces of the puzzle fall where they may.
Nurse Gilbert's co-workers, Kathy Ricks, John Wall, and Renee Walsh, are conflicted. Reporter Fred Contrada.
There was a reluctance among the nurses to shine the spotlight on one of their own and say, this person is killing all these people.
Steve Plant.
I interviewed the three nurses, and they informed me of certain situations that they were involved with, where their patients either coded or died. And in looking back, those patients should have not coded and died. And the common denominator with those deaths and codes was Kristen Gilbert.
But Gilbert doesn't realize she's being watched. U.S. Attorney William Welch.
On February 15th, when Kathy Ricks came on duty, she went to the ICU unit and counted three epinephrine ampoules in the ICU medicine cabinet. Mr. Squire was later admitted to the ICU unit and then subsequently coded. Kathy Ricks immediately responded to the code and went directly to the ICU medicine cabinet, where she looked for the three epinephrine ampoules, but they weren't there. She then went immediately to the needle disposal bucket and found the three broken ampoules in the bucket. Gilbert was the only nurse assigned to the ICU unit at that time.
Plant calls the Massachusetts Prosecutor's Office. U.S. Attorney William Welch.
I received a call from one of the special agents who told me that he believed that they had a serial killer at the VA Medical Center and needed to open a grand jury investigation. I have to say that I viewed his allegations with skepticism because the VA Medical Center is a very tranquil place. But they had the results of interviews of three senior nurses with more than 60 years experience who all had these same suspicions.
Special Agent Plant backs up his case with some sobering stats.
106 deaths occurred overall at the hospital. Of the 106 deaths, 63 deaths occurred on Ward C. Of the 63, 44 occurred in the evening shift when Gilbert was working.
Determining whether a patient's death is natural or criminal is a complicated affair. Agent Plant does a thorough job and comes to a troubling conclusion.
We interviewed over 150 people. And when we put all the interviews together, they all pointed towards one individual, and that was Gilbert.
The state prosecutor's office responds. William Welch.
So at that point, we opened the grand jury investigation. We added Trooper Kevin Murphy, who had homicide experience, and I became more active in the investigation.
Trooper Kevin Murphy brings a cold logic and deep experience to the investigation. And though called a trooper, Kevin Murphy is a true detective and thinks like one.
Every criminal commits a crime in a different way. Each crime is like a puzzle. The more pieces you find, the clearer the picture gets.
As the investigation gears up, Gilbert gets gone.
Kristen got wind of the investigation and knew she was going to be brought in and perhaps suspended. So she came forward first and claimed that she had a shoulder injury from a patient twisting her arm and went out on a workman's compensation injury instead. That was a good thing the way she left, because she would go home, she wouldn't be out looking for a job, and she wouldn't be dealing with patients at the hospital.
Special Agent Steve Plant calls the injured Kristen in for an interview. She's a cool customer.
When I interviewed Gilbert, she was very monotone, didn't offer much as far as any explanations other than the questions that I was asking her. And she just wanted to know whether she was being accused of something. I told her she wasn't being accused of anything. We're just trying to find out why this anomaly happened at the hospital.
Plant asks Gilbert why so many patients die on her watch.
Her explanation as to why she was there so often was because she was relied upon so often in these emergency situations.
The three lawmen, Plant, Murphy, and Welch, review their evidence. Gilbert has means, untraceable intravenous epinephrine. She has opportunity, plenty of access to defenseless VA patients. But what's motivating Gilbert to kill? Reporter Fred Contrada.
The theory was that she was injecting these patients with epinephrine. She'd then call code. A number of people would respond, including the security department. The prosecution maintained she had the hots for one of the security guards, and she'd perform for him. She'd kind of get off on him being there. There was definitely a sexual element to it.
So, bringing patients to the brink of death seems to turn Gilbert on. Reporter Thomas Farragher.
One witness noticed during a code that Gilbert was literally playing footsie with Pearl. Another time she would reach out affectionately, smiling at him during a code.
Special Agent Steve Plant.
It was almost like a Munchausen's disease that Gilbert had, where she was putting patients into a code situation and then to be the one there with the defibrillator to bring that patient back.
Thomas Farragher recounts that security officer James Perrault is Kristen's lover. He keeps Gilbert up to date on the investigation against her.
They discussed the case. He wanted to support her, but she was increasingly lashing out at coworkers who were pointing the finger at her.
But James Perrault has problems much bigger than a crazy ex-girlfriend.
They handed Perrault a grand jury summons and a blunt message. You need to decide which side of the fence you're going to be on.
His grand jury testimony is a mind-blower. Perrault confirms that after she got off work early following the suspicious death of Kenneth Cuttings, the two met up for a date. Then, this.
Perrault told investigators about a phone call from Gilbert in which he said, "I did it. You know I did it. I killed those guys."
Perrault testifies Gilbert's admitted being a lethal injector, but his evidence is technically hearsay. Plant suggests James Perrault start recording his phone calls with Gilbert, and Perrault pays a price for his cooperation.
After he walked out of his two-hour interview with investigators, Perrault said the front tire in his car had been deflated, and over the next few days, he noticed that somebody had keyed his car, the windshield had been spray-painted, and he was convinced that Gilbert was defacing his car.
investigators pay a visit to the guy Gilbert's kicked to the curb, her newly estranged husband, Glenn. Glenn tells Kevin Murphy that after his wife met James Perrault, his dinner started tasting funny.
He comes home one night and he's not feeling well, and his wife decides to take him to the local emergency room. They find that his potassium level is low. If you give somebody a diuretic and you grind it up and put that in their food, it will lower their potassium level. In a young person, it can lower it enough to cause cardiac arrest.
And that may not have been the only attempt on Glenn Gilbert's life. One evening, his wife comes home unexpectedly and tells him she's going to take a blood sample.
She says to her husband, "Before I take your blood, I have to flush your vein." So she injects into him a clear fluid, and almost immediately he starts to lose consciousness and does lose consciousness. 10 minutes later, he awakens to find Kristen gathering up her gear, and she made a comment to him that you probably passed out from the sight of the needle. Anybody that knows anything about medicine knows that if you're going to be giving blood, nobody injects anything into that vein before the blood is drawn. From that, we hypothesized that she actually tried to kill him.
Good thing Glenn's healthy. He allows investigators to search the home he and Kristen once shared.
I find in the pantry a handbook of poisons. Now, it's not that unusual to find a handbook of poison in a nurse's house, but what was curious is that there were pages dog-eared. One was for potassium and one was for epinephrine.
Potassium and epinephrine. The circle is tightening. Suddenly, a new wrinkle. Agent Steve Plant.
One evening, the VA Medical Center received a bomb threat. It was a male-sounding caller. The fire department was called, police department was called, a search was conducted of the hospital itself, and no bomb could be found. Perrault had tape recordings of the bomb threat caller. I listened to the tapes, and it sounded like a male caller.
Plant shares the recordings with Massachusetts State Trooper Kevin Murphy.
So we start checking with the telephone company to backtrace some of these phone calls that had been used, and we find that a couple of local phone booths had actually been used. There's probably 15 phone booths within 5 miles of Kristen's house. I set up on one location where I can see 5 telephone booths from where I am. And lo and behold, she drives in right next to me. She can't be 25 feet away. Stops, gets out of the car, and makes a telephone call.
Murphy immediately calls the VA and confirms that, yes, they did just receive a bomb threat.
So I stayed at the scene to preserve the forensic evidence at the phone. And later on, we had it dusted for fingerprints and we found Kristen's prints.
But the call sounds like a man. Steve Plant makes an inspired deduction.
I went to the toy store and met with the sales manager. I asked her if she had any type of voice-changing toy that would alter one's voice. She spoke into the toy and slowed her voice down, and it sounded almost identical to what was on the recordings from the VA Medical Center.
Still, Plant needs a solid connection to Gilbert. The store manager provides the hammer.
She came out with some documents, and one of the documents was a credit card receipt signed by Gilbert.
Charges are filed, and Gilbert faces the court for the first time.
Well, with the evidence we had the receipt as well as the devices that she used to call in the bomb threats. We had the eyewitness, Trooper Murphy, showing her making a phone call to the VA Medical Center. And we also had Bill Welch taking one of the tapes from the bomb threat, playing it in a recorder at a normal speed. And Glenn Gilbert recognized the voice in that recording as his wife, Kristen Gilbert. She was arrested, she was convicted of the bomb threat, and she was sentenced to 15 months in federal penitentiary.
Hey, Murder Time fans. If you've ever wanted to make your home feel safer, there's no better time than now. This week, our friends at Simply Safe are giving Murder Time listeners early access to all their holiday deals, 40% off their award-winning home security. We love Simply Safe because it has everything you need to make your home safe. Indoor and outdoor cameras, comprehensive sensors, all monitored around the clock by trained professionals who send help the instant you need it. These are Simply Safe's biggest discounts of the year. You can get a complete home security system starting at just over $100. You can easily customize a system for your home online in minutes and even get free custom recommendations from Simply Safe. There are no long-term contracts or commitments. It's a really easy way to start feeling a bit more peace of mind. SimpliSafe was even named Best Home Security System of 2021 by U.S. News & World Report. Take advantage of SimpliSafe's holiday deals and get 40% off your new home security system by visiting simplisafe.com/murdertime. Again, that's simplisafe.com/murdertime for 40% off your entire system. With Gilbert behind bars, investigators work on building a multiple murder case against her. They get permission to exhume the remains of Stanley Jagodowski, Edward Squira, and Kenny Cutting. Here's Trooper Kevin Murphy with what they're looking for.
There's a small hole at the back of your eye that spasms. And when you die, it prevents the fluid in your eye from leaking out, so it becomes an excellent repository for poisons. And we were actually able to examine it with our scientists, and they actually found that there was an elevated epinephrine level.
The findings are conclusive. These veterans have been killed by epinephrine injection. The DA reaches out to Henry Hooden's sister, Christine.
I'll never forget the night that I got a phone call at 8 o'clock on a Friday night to go down to the district attorney's office. When I got there, the whole investigative team was there. My chair was right across from Kevin Murphy's, and I sat down, and he said, "I have some bad news for you." And he just looked me eye to eye and said, "Your brother's been murdered."
The woman who started it all, who insisted against medical advice to have Henry's body autopsied, finally learns she was right all along. Henry, Stanley, and two more victims will be the core of the prosecution.
The reason that we chose those four people is that we had excellent medical documentation on the patients, and we had excellent medical observation by the staff at the hospital.
Gilbert is charged with four counts of first-degree murder and two counts of attempted murder. Prosecutors seek the death penalty. As her trial begins, the biggest hurdle may be the lack of a witness.
There was no smoking gun in this case. It was all based on circumstantial evidence. Nobody actually saw her inject a patient with epinephrine.
The jury hears more about Gilbert. This is Judith Cameron of the New Hampshire Daily Gazette.
Kristen was very bright when she was a senior in high school. She was taking college courses. She met her husband at a beach in New Hampshire. They had two children. So in many ways, she lived a very normal life. However, if you dug a little deeper and talked more with the neighbors, you would discover that there was something indeed very odd about this woman.
Odd and deadly. Henry Hooden's sister, Christine Duquette, describes proceedings.
Well, the trial lasted 6 months, and I was there every day. I did not miss a one day of the trial. I wanted to find out what happened to my brother. And it was very emotional. The gratitude to the two nurses and the one occupational therapist that actually blew the whistle on her. They had suspicions of what she was doing, and they paid attention. Everything hinged on them coming forward and their testimonies.
In addition to testimony from Ward C's Kathy Ricks, John Wall, and Renee Walsh, both Glenn Gilbert and James Perrault take the stand, testifying that Gilbert admitted killing patients. After deliberating for 12 days, the jury convicts. Three counts of first-degree murder, one count of second-degree murder, and two counts of attempted murder are returned. But they don't deliver the death sentence.
I really felt that Kristen Gilbert deserved the death penalty. This is somebody who, in cold blood, has killed many, many veterans, people who fought for this country to keep her safe, as well as everyone else in this country. And I was just appalled at somebody that could have so little regard for life.
ADS reporter Judith Cameron.
Her defense attorney argued that the jury should not put her to death for the only reason that she's a mother, and to let her sons someday go to her and ask, "Why? Why did you do this?"
Serial killer Kristen Gilbert is sentenced to four consecutive life terms. As to the why, she's never said. Reporter Fred Contrada.
Although she was only charged with four counts of murder and two counts of attempted murder, the prosecutors theorized she could have killed more than 40 people and have been the most prolific serial killer in U.S. history.
I guess we'll never know. But 40 veterans, such a tragedy. Gilbert is serving her sentence at the federal prison in Carswell, Texas. I hope you enjoyed listening to our crime story, The Hypodermic Killer. I really appreciate you listening. Please join me next time as we take a deep dive into another high-profile murder. Remember, we are the very best in crime podcasts. Murder Time.
Simon Decker wrote and produced The Hypodermic Killer, working with files from the television series Crime Stories, Blood, Lies, and Alibis, and Catching Killers. Our executive producer is Ron Getz. Our supervising producer is Robert Laughlin. And our technical producer is Joe Watts. Murder Time is a production of Partners in Motion.